Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, June 13th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also go to your app store, either app store, and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on it, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments, questions, answers, testimonials, various commentaries, and if you have any of those to share with us, please do so. Give us a call at 563-999-3581. When you call that number, you can listen to the show. If you choose to press 1, it will put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I can turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And we'd be happy to have your comments and questions because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. Our intention with this work is to be of service, and we have been working through the way of mastery. We are where we left off was on lesson 13, and we are being reminded in various ways about how we create the very experience of our lives. While we don't necessarily create every external event that happens or that we are a witness to, we are absolutely creating our experience of it. And so we were, the last part that we were being introduced to and invited to is cultivating an unlimited consciousness. Right? The title of this chapter, Lesson 13 in the Way of Mastery, is You Are Unlimited Spirit. You are in the holiest of temples, which is your true self. And you abide in this very moment. It is the perfect moment for your transformation. Nothing outside of you can limit you in that regard. It's always accessible for you to step into a deeper realization that you're not just a body and that you have access to connection with all minds. And where we left off is this idea that only you have the power to create your experience. And the text reads, please listen carefully. No one has the power to create your experience. No one has the power to limit your experience. And nowhere in the laws of Creator has it ever been written that you must conform your experience to the choices of another. You remain free. You remain free to freely choose to be the embodiment of Christ. You are the one who can bless creation. It begins when you are willing to assume responsibility for what you want to use time for. In truth, you're doing it anyway. You are always using time for exactly what you are choosing. You are not surviving. You are not trying to get things done that the world is requiring. Never is anything occurring except that you are having awareness of the effects of how you are choosing to use your consciousness, and that is all. And that's true even if no one has told you it's true. It's just like gravity is still there having an impact on you even if you've never had a physics lesson, even if no one's ever tried to describe to you all of the various ways our scientists have tried to define and understand gravity. Gravity is still there. The text goes on and says, here is where the way of mastery, the way of transformation begins. Ultimately, it is also where it ends. But the difference will be that you will no longer even want to choose anything that speaks of limitation. Even though the body-mind that you once identified as yourself still seems to be moving about in space and time, you will not even look at that body-mind and say, this is mine. You will simply say, the body-mind is a temporary communication device that has been brought forth from the ocean of my unlimited self, as I have done a multitude of times in a multitude of universes. It's not a big deal. Your consciousness will literally shift. It will take a new perspective, and you will know that you are pure spirit, that you do not abide in time at all, that you can simply delight in utilizing the body-mind as a communication device. When you get on your airplane and you travel to some distant shore to a place that you are enjoying being in, you're still using the body-mind as a communication device between you and the earth, between you and other creations that have come forth with other minds. Whether it is a beautiful building or a beautiful painting, all that you are ever experiencing is something that you have drawn to yourself through the medium of the body. It is an experience, and that is all. You are the unlimited one who is in the driver's seat. I think when I read that about the old adage that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, And so many people can be so caught up in a rage or a sadness or a hurt or a confusion that they don't even notice the exquisite sunset or sunrise or the magnificent work of art that is, or the phenomenal architecture that they're driving by. We are calling these things into our experience, and sometimes they're right there for us to have the experience of, and we choose not to experience them. There are other stories, and some of them may be coming up in further lessons in the way of mastery, but the idea that we get so busy and we get so focused on the thought that we're supposed to be here earning a living, or we're supposed to be here pleasing other people, or we're supposed to be here making other people envious of us because we've accumulated so much or achieved so much, that even let the experiences of our day-to-day life sink in. And the one example that is in the way of mastery is that you have a busy day on a Saturday, and you've got a whole list of errands to run, and you've got stuff you were doing around the house, and you leave the house with your list of errands, and you tell your partner or family or friend or whatever that, you know, about when you'll be back and what you're going to go do on your errands. And you're running out errands. And in the middle of it, you had plans to stop by your favorite ice cream store and have a treat and then do some more errands and then come home. And you do all of that and you get home and your partner says, how was the trip? Did you get everything done? Yes. Did you stop for ice cream? Yes. What did you get? And you have to pause and try to remember what you ordered at the ice cream shop. Now, you went to the ice cream shop, you ordered the stuff, you took it to the table, you sat down and ate it, and here you are, you know, an hour or two later, and you can't even remember. So, did it happen? Yes. Did you experience it? No. No. This is why that cultures like the Japanese have developed this ritual for having tea. It's literally a meditative practice, but it's intended to be a reminder to slow down for every moment of life, to watch every movement, to let it sink in, to appreciate the breath of life, to feel the temperature of the air on the skin, to notice your breath and your heart beating, and be present. Mindfulness at a deeper level. Because when we do that, we create a different experience than when we put an abundance of our concentration and the focus of our mind energy on our internal thoughts. Oh, I wonder what that person is doing. Oh, I wonder if they're judging me. Oh, look at that person, how sloppy they're dressed. Oh, aren't these people going to be envious of that? Oh, I feel horrible because I'm not, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. So this book is trying to tell us in a variety of different ways, and as is evidenced by the heading of the section we're reading now, only you have the power to create your experience. And you're using your body-mind, the body-mind unit, to communicate what you value. Whether you realize it or not, what you spend your time doing, what you spend your time focusing on, is what you value. And you're communicating that, not by what you say. Oh, I think that, you know, ukuleles are the most important instrument in the world. But you don't play the ukulele, you don't own a ukulele, you don't even have pictures of the ukulele in your house. Oh, I think family is the most important thing. But you're a workaholic, and You can't wait until your next promotion or the next business that you start or the next company that you buy up. What we spend our time doing is what we value, whether we realize it or not. And again, in this last section, it says we don't have to do anything. We remain completely free. I must think it's important. I'm backing up to read that last section again. Only you have the power to create your experience. Please listen carefully. No one has the power to create your experience. No one has the power to limit your experience. And nowhere in the laws of the Creator has it ever been written that you must conform your choices and your experiences to the choices of another. You remain free, free to freely choose to be the embodiment of Christ. You are the one who can bless creation. Imagine that it begins when you are willing to assume responsibility for what you want to use time for. In truth, you're doing it anyway. You are always using time for exactly what you are choosing. You are not here to survive. You're not just surviving. You are not here to try to get things done in the world that the world says you need to do. Never is anything occurring except that you're having an awareness of the effects of how you are choosing to use consciousness itself, and that is all. Here is where the way of transformation begins. Ultimately, it's also where it ends. But the difference will be that you will no longer even want to choose anything that speaks of limitation. Even though the body-mind that you once identified as yourself still seems to be moving about in space and time, you won't even look at it and say, this is mine. You'll simply say, the body-mind is a temporary communication device. It's brought forth from the ocean of my unlimited self, as I have done a multitude of times in a multitude of universes. It's not a big deal. The big deal is what I communicate with it, not the body-mind unit. The big deal is the consciousness that it arose within, not what arose. Your consciousness will literally shift. It will take a new perspective, and you will know that you are pure spirit and that you do not abide in time at all, and that you can simply delight in utilizing the body-mind as a communication device. And when you get on your airplane and travel some distant shore to a place that you are enjoying being in, you're still using your body-mind as a communication device between you and the earth, between you and the other creations that have come forth from their minds. Whether it's a beautiful building or a beautiful painting, all that you are ever experiencing is something that you have drawn to yourself through the medium of the body. It is an experience, and that is all. You are the unlimited one who is in the driver's seat. And again, as we're told over and over again, Guy Finley has some talks about this. The Way of Mastery talks about it. Krishnamurti talks about it in his way. If you want to know what you value, just look at your life. Look at what you have in your life and look at how you spend your time. Do you spend your time thinking happy thoughts or sad thoughts? If you spend time thinking sad thoughts, you value the sadness. You want to know what you value? Look at how you spend your time doing certain things. What are you doing day to day? How much of your day do you spend building on your practice of awareness? Awareness of what? Awareness of what you're pointing this creation device towards. your mind, the mind energy that flows through you, the thought energy that flows through you, is a creation device. It is, you can think of it as a spigot coming from a cosmic fire hydrant, creation hydrant. This water is going to flow. This creation energy is going to flow. And whatever this creation energy gets pointed at, it's going to create more of. And you have been given dominion over one of those hoses, one of those little spigots. And no one, this book and a lot of other deep spiritual texts tell you, no one can take that power from you. It's always on, and you get to choose. The next segment is titled, Bringing Awareness to the Limiting Definitions of Yourself. The second stage of the way of transformation requires that you begin to bring awareness to the little squiggly lines that you've drawn on the white and unlimited and perfectly unblemished canvas of your consciousness. Your psychologist would call these personalities or masks. We're asked to become aware of the little selves that we have created, these little squiggly lines, these little masks, these little personalities or personas. And it is suggested that we begin to ask ourselves, quote, what am I defending? What am I continuing on a daily basis that no longer fulfills me? After all, I have been there. I have done that. How might I look upon these little selves that I've created, these little drops of foam on this temporary wave that I have brought forth? And how might I use them differently? I wonder if I could create a brand new one. Why is this important? It is because of the squiggles that you have drawn. For instance, perhaps you would say to yourself, well, I'm Mary Jane. I'm a vice president at a bank, and I was born in such and such a city. My parents were so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. And I'd really be different, except for the fact that my sister used to beat on me when I was young. The second you define yourself, you constrain yourself within the parameters that you have chosen to value. Instantly, you create exactly the experience of the vibrations that are the effects of the squiggles. Think of those squiggles, the parameters of the little self, as the effect of certain pebbles that have been dropped into the pond of your consciousness. Once you draw the lines, certain effects flow from it. What if you were to decide to create a self that sees itself as perfectly unlimited? Instead of saying, well, I have to go see my sister. I know she used to beat me, but that's just the way it is. It's just who I am. Instead of that, what if you were to say to yourself, quote, I am a perfectly unlimited being, and I think I will create a self who is an expression of the unlimited love of Christ. I'm going to go see this human being. You might use her name, but do not call them your brother or sister or aunt or uncle. And I'm going to utilize time for beaming as much love to them as I can, for no other reason than it will feel rather grand to do so. I am the embodiment of Christ. And though this one may not know it, it does not matter. I can enjoy it anyway. Close quotes. Do you see how that could begin to move you beyond an identification of a certain definition of yourself that has actually locked you into a narrow set of parameters, which can only have certain kinds of effects? What if you were to sit down with those that you call your parents and deliberately chose to look at them as beings that you had called into your field of awareness? What if you chose to see that they are infinite and free beings in perfect equality with you? They simply chose to receive your cosmic telegram and took on a certain role in space and time to help you play out what you wanted to learn. Would that begin to shift your identification with them as merely your parents? For if you look upon them and say, "Those are my parents," you have defined yourself as only their child. Can you begin to see the significance here? It is a very, very important thing to bring your awareness to the definitions you have given yourself and to keep insisting upon doing that each and every day. That is like dropping the same pebble into the same stream and creating the same effects. And nothing is transformed unless we can become aware of how we keep defining ourselves and how we define ourselves in limitation. We cannot move into transformation and change. Now, this is likely to bring up some fear in the egoic mind. Your egoic mind will ask, "What would happen if I let go of the definitions I'm familiar with?" Here's the answer. Nothing will happen, because in reality, those definitions have never truly defined you anyway. It's not possible for your unlimited self to be limited. Your unlimited self goes on creating and experiencing throughout all dimensions. The only change that could be said to occur is that that little tiny ray of your beingness that is currently dancing through the experiences of being a mind, body, and space and time, that little bit of you will begin to throw open the doors and actually start to access a cosmic awareness. If you want to experience walking on this planet as an enlightened master, first, come to understand the foundation upon which the way of transformation is based. Second, bring awareness to the definitions of yourself that have become unconscious for you. And then deliberately redefine yourself as you enter into the field of your experiences. Here is the rub. No one can make the decision for you. Yeshua says, "I have never enlightened anyone. I have never even so much as lifted them an inch. I have merely chosen to demonstrate unlimitedness for myself, and part of that experience was taking on the crucifixion, just so that I could learn how to overcome death. That was my choice, my pathway, my calling forth of experience. I can tell you that it is so much grander to be in this body while being completely aware of your cosmic self. In the same moment, I must say to you, it is perfectly okay for you to perceive yourself as a limited ray of consciousness. Yes, there are certain results that follow, but still, you're completely free to continue in that field of experience for as long as you wish. And if we value limitedness, limitation, and lack, that is what we will do. That is what we will bring. If we value resentment because we weren't born into abundance and freedom and expansive creativity and joy and aliveness and surrounded by loving family, if that's what we value, generating upset about that, generating resentment, generating anger, generating jealousy of others that have that, if that's what we value, that is how we will spend our mind energy. That is how we will spend our time. you actually do what you value. I know when I first heard that, I was not comfortable with it at all. That was probably about 20 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, when I heard just that way from Guy Finley. Now, the whole idea that you do what you value. And if you want to know what you value, take a look at what you've got in your life, or take a look at what you spend your time doing. Take a look at the pattern of thoughts that you either struggle against or pour your mind energy into and hold on to and fight for and defend. I remember a few years ago I had thought, my new definition for being stuck is if I have any negative thought or negative emotion active in my mind. That just means I'm stuck. My new definition for being hopelessly stuck is when I am arguing for my negative thought or negative emotion. I'm saying I am justified in having this negative thought or negative emotion. That means I'm hopelessly stuck. And that's just validated by this Way of Mastery lesson where it says only you have the ability to create your experience. They use the word power, but the heading of that last section was only you have the power to create your experience. So, if I'm saying I really don't like this or that, and here's why. I can tell you why. I have every right to not like this and to be angry at that person. And did you see what they did? Did you hear what they said? And, of course, anybody who had that happen to them would be upset. As long as I'm arguing for it, I'm hopelessly stuck. That leads me to the quote that I bring up often from Guy Finley where he says, we must actively steal from ourselves every excuse to be angry, to be bitter, to be negative, to be hurtful towards ourselves or somebody else. If we are not actively stealing from ourselves and dismantling every rationalization and every excuse for being upset, depressed, angry, hurt, bitter, resentful, confused, jealous, vengeful, if we aren't actively dismantling those, we will be able to rationalize any level of abuse. And we'll stay hopelessly stuck as long as we're arguing for it. Of Course in Miracles says, you know, these negative effects of our errors in thought will persist, but only as long as the thoughts that created them are cherished by us. If we cherish my thought that I'm right and the other person's wrong, the negative effects that ripple out from that are going to be in full effect for as long as I hold on to cherishing that thought. If I revel in the idea that I'm right and they were wrong, look, see how I got proved right? I will be cherishing that thought. And I will continue and feed creative energy into the negative effects that ripple out of that thought. So we value what we do. And what we do and we spend our time doing teaches us about what we value, whether we believe it or not, whether we like it or not. Area code 760, you're in the air.
Hi, Dr. Tim, this is Ann in Florida. So along with that, I just had like a moment of revelation when you were talking about being stuck. I had to listen to the archives all this past week because I was helping with Vacation Bible School, so I had some So the one I re-listened to Fridays to remind me, and you had Susan on at the end. And so today I was rewinding how blessed I was to have interacted with this one young man in my group. And I was just a group leader where you led them from station to station and the different stations that were set up. And he was going into the fourth grade. And he had some behavior issues. And in the beginning, I thought, oh, no. And then I was reminded, because I've been listening, I started listening to the archives, and then I was reminded just of the work is to go inside. And so the second day I had prayed, okay, God, because I started to try to figure it out. What am I going to say to him, you know, from my consciousness? And I go, oh, wait. And I caught myself. No, just let go. Kind of like Susan was talking about letting go of the rope. So I let go and I just let it happen. And the incident, almost every day there was an incident, but it got better because of my perception and because I let it go and let my guidance system kick in. And not even thinking about it. You were talking about intentions before. And it's like I didn't go with expectations. Like by the third day, I had noticed that he, in one of his behaviors, there where he was trying to calm down, and getting angry was okay. I was able to say to him because I saw that he wrote down that he was mad. I'm mad. In this pamphlet in one of the station storytelling stations. And I go, when it was appropriate, I leaned over and I said, that is really great that you wrote down how you felt. Okay. On the other hand, throwing things is not acceptable. And he had, the first day on in the game, he had kicked something. Didn't hurt anybody, but when he threw this marker the day before, it, you know, could have hit the child in the eye. But I didn't, what I remembered was, I didn't have to say any of that, what could have happened. I was just shown, without me thinking about it, which is what you're talking about, without thinking about it, as we get better at being led, by who we are, by the love that we are, it just, when I saw what he had written, I didn't even think about how to say it or what to say. It just came. And he accepted and he calmed down. And so then I was able to use that on another day, the last day actually, it was 5 days, to remind him when he had an episode again. And I said, do you remember the other day, you know, when you wrote this down? He says, well, I don't have anything to write with. And we were in the storytelling section, and the other kids were out doing what they were doing that he had taken himself away from because he was pouting. And so I said, here's something to write with. By the time I got the item to write with and something to write on, he had already started to, you know, change the situation, and he was willing to go back. So I didn't have to say to him, you know, if you calm down or... anyway, that was an experience that it was kind of like what Susan was sharing about, you know, when she was out walking, and it's like, wow, okay, feeling good about myself. Hey, I can do this. Well, then this morning, I started thinking, oh, well, I could have said this, and I could have said that to the young man. And, oh, it would have made it even better. And I'm going, I caught myself and I go, wait. So then I was listening to the replay, and you got to the point where you were talking with Susan towards the end of the session, and you caught her in a comment that brought up inadequacy. And I just want to say I learned from that. So it told me, oh, no, Anne, that's the old pattern. You started thinking of what you could have done better. But except that you made a difference while you were there in that amount of time. And, I mean, you may never see this child again because he wasn't from our church. So I just wanted to thank you that, and just tell anybody, the archives are so important when we can't always listen to them. And so you were talking about the inadequacy and where the old patterns come up. And so... as I was listening to you say that just a few minutes ago, I thought when you said the word stuck, I thought of the old 78 records. And if there was a slight scratch on them or something, it would start to replay. And I kind of compared it to, okay, when I'm stuck, when I start to use these old patterns, it's kind of what I'm doing. I'm replaying it. And I'm the only one who has the ability to go take that needle off the record and move it forward. And
exactly.
Anyway, that's the picture. Yeah,
and,
I got the picture for me. So that.
And that's a great example of how automatic those negative thoughts are. And so the value for anybody, any one of us, to decide to use some more, consciously direct more of our mind energy to scanning our thoughts, to taking full responsibility for our thoughts, because the old patterns are just going to, you know, the minute we're not looking and anything happens that's on the same vibrational frequency as an old pattern we have stored, that old pattern is going to get activated and we're going to experience it in our thoughts. And if we're not careful, we'll let those thoughts motivate our behaviors. And the next thing you know, we're acting from a negative belief or thought that's really old, that's never helped us before and isn't helping now.
Yes.
And it's
absolutely.
You know, for most of us, it's as common as the next breath to say, "Oh, this is horrible. I should have done this. I should have done that." I really like when Byron Katie talks about this, and she says, "Well, you know how you know that whatever happened was just perfect? Do you know, Anne, how you can tell that whatever has happened in your life was just perfect? You can tell because it already happened." Because if you can't go back and fix it, it was perfect just the way it is.
Yeah.
It's either part of the extension of love or it's the learning for, you know, as Abraham would say, it's there to help me learn from contrast. Now I know what I don't want to do. Now I know what I would prefer not to do.
Yes.
But
absolutely.
If I can't go back and change the past, there is zero benefit to me judging it as good or bad, right or wrong. It's really,
right.
You know, in the Way of Mastery at one point it says, it is what it is, and that's the beginning of wisdom, to accept what the flow of life is presenting you for what it is as it is, without the judgment, without the labeling, without the instantaneous calling into your consciousness this whole pattern of thoughts about how you should be, how somebody else should be, the way life should unfold in the next moment. And if you call that to yourself, you end up distorting your perception.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not just there in the moment being with it. You're judging it. You're bringing your memories of the past into it. You're evaluating. You're scrambling. And that's using the conscious logical mind or the intellect, which is okay. I mean, it's a useful tool, but it's only useful in very select circumstances. Right? We used the analogy of the carpenter before. It's got dozens of tools in her shop. She doesn't pick up a hammer and ask the hammer every time there's something to do, what should I do? The hammer's only going to say, hit it. Because, you know, to a hammer, everything looks like a nail. That's the old adage about that. But our intellect is there to help us figure out, okay, why isn't the cell phone sending the message I just typed? It's not there to validate and rationalize my staying angry, or my judging someone, or my judging how the flow of life went. Way of Mastery says, in the lessons we've already read, it says that one of the best uses for your intellect in this kind of work is that it can be there to help you evaluate how it gunks things up so you can see the garbage thoughts. You can observe the pattern of the flow of life that comes back to you when you've constricted and when you've gotten negative, etc. So it's useful, but it's got a very limited usefulness. It's not very good for figuring out what I could say, what I should say, how I should be perceived, how I should perceive others.
Absolutely. And I caught myself on the Monday because after the behavior, one of the games started, and it was the first one station that we went to, I started thinking by the end of that day at some point after, you know, the class was over, the whole thing was over, I started thinking about the parents. Oh, my gosh, you know, how do they put up with this and the school, and it goes to a Christian academy, and how do they deal with that? And I realized that Monday night, no, I need to, when I started trying to figure it out again, I go, oh, wait, I'm on the wrong path. Clearly, I'm judging. I have nothing to do with that. I can only do what I can deal with while I have him and to keep the other children safe and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's like, okay. And then today, you know, catching on to that. So doing the next right thing was when I heard that, listening to it, and then I've always got that archive to go back to re-listen to it, just like I'll have to re-listen to today because there's so many gems in there, you know, from
lesson. Which date was that? Which date was that you were listening to?
This last Friday.
Okay.
So it would have been the 10th? Yeah, the 10th.
Yeah.
Because you had Susan was on just like the last 15 minutes of it. I mean, I listened to her other stories too, which made me think, hey, yeah, I had that going. So it was like the resonance was coming out. You know, she had that experience out walking while I was having this experience at, you know, Vacation Bible School for the week. And yeah, and we're in this community. It's like the more I hear that, the more people share it. It's like, all right, you know, we're in this community where we are moving forward and we're recognizing our old patterns. And the other side of that is that we, like you say, we get to that point where we don't have to think about it. We come from that place of love without even thinking about it. So,
well, and,
working on it.
And coming, great. And coming from that place of love is so important when we're dealing with ourselves and everybody else. So here's this, you know, what you said, a fourth grader in your little school that you're doing. And you, if you relate to that person based on his or her behaviors, then you had this, you know, it's like taking, it's like going to the Grand Canyon with a pinhole camera, the old cardboard box pinhole camera, and you get to the edge of the canyon and you open the shutter and, you know, count the amount of time, the seconds that you have for the exposure and close it, and you take it home and you say, this is the Grand Canyon. Whatever that pinhole camera recorded of the Grand Canyon, that's it. And then you say, I know what the Grand Canyon is. And you say, I should be able to get a job as a guide for the Grand Canyon. It's ridiculous. So judging that fourth grader by his or her behavior is as silly.
Mm-hmm.
But relating to that spark of life, expressing in form as a fourth grader, and keeping your heart open and asking to be shown, understanding that everything that isn't an extension of love is a cry for help and healing, and asking to be shown what's yours to do here, to connect with that person and offer them the peace that they seek and offer them the extension of that loving energy and form, that's going to transform your life and theirs.
Yeah.
Now, again, they have to be willing to accept it, right? This is what we're just reading in this lesson. Right where I stopped reading is the whole idea that you can choose to remain viewing yourself as limited and small. And you can choose to experience that as long as you wish. There are certain results that will follow, But no one, not even Yeshua, not the Creator, is going to come and take your free will from you. It is perfectly okay for you to perceive yourself as a limited ray of consciousness, small, helpless, hopeless, victim. And it's okay for you to experience that fourth grader as nothing but his or her behaviors. It isn't going to yield things that you prefer. It will give you more things to rationalize negative emotions around for yourself and the other. But that's, you know, it's just another way to talk about how we're called in this work just to observe, to catch it when we judge, to catch it when we think we know we're right and something's wrong, and to just experience for ourselves, how does it feel? What's my experience when I judge, when I get tight or tense or constricted? And how does that compare to how I feel when I step into what this work has called divine ignorance?
Yeah.
I don't know what anything is or is for. Let me just step into that realization and then ask to be shown. What's mine to do here? How can I be a blessing to myself and others, et cetera, et cetera?
And that phrase is what, when I started to fix it, caught myself fixing it or making judgmental thoughts, was asked to be shown. I mean, because you say it a lot and I hear it a lot, and it actually, you know, then now it's in my unconscious. So it that thought came forward, and that's what changed my whole experience for the week. So, and so reminding myself, just ask to be shown. I have to stay out of trying to figure it out. I do. Because the
no,
end
you
of
don't.
The week, I...
No, you don't.
Oh, okay.
You are perfectly free to stay in figuring it out. Watch yeah. what you do with your language there, because then if you don't stay in that open space, then you beat yourself up for it. So even that phrase, I have to, I enjoy the experience when I stop figuring it out and ask to be shown. I think I'll choose that more often every time I think about it. Speak to yourself that way, lovingly, gently, embracing. Catch it when you come up with another judgment. Guess where that comes from? That's an old tape playing in your mind when you say, I gotta. No, you don't. Relax, soften. You're an unlimited being. You're free to choose. And the choices you make have these consequences. And they're okay. It's all just energy. It's waves on a cosmic ocean. This body of mind unit that you have is simply a communication device. All of that's okay. Carries ripples of energy that you get to experience. And when they come back for you to experience, again, you're free to choose how you experience them. Do I look at them as, oh, woe is me. Look at the misery I've created in my life. Mm-hmm. How I've wasted time. Or do I say, oh, look at this. Mm-hmm. I chose this and I experienced that. I think I would prefer something else. Let me choose again. I'm free to choose again. Each new present moment is another opportunity to create anew. And you are the creator. And there's no template that you have to follow. Right? You don't have to survive. You don't have to earn a certain amount of money. You don't have to get somebody to love you. So, great example right there. Just watch how many times we do that in our thoughts. Oh, I really got to. Oh, look at that. Yeah. There's a tension. There's an emotional intensity there. If I follow that to its logical conclusion, the next time I screw up, I'm going to beat myself up even harder. I think I'll let go of that. I think I'll find a different, more loving, more compassionate, more supportive way, nurturing way to talk to myself. Mm-hmm. That might be a fun way to spend some time the rest of this day, to practice speaking more lovingly and gently to myself. Maybe I'll do that.
Thank you. Thank you for catching that. Yes, absolutely. Which I can see where I would have in my old pattern continued the rest of the day with that splitting in and out. And now I go, okay. It goes, isn't it the one where we have to do? No, we not have to. Do nothing. So I guess I was looking at events, neutral events, and I was doing that. So I just need to carry it over. Yeah. But and recognize. So it's recognizing that's another aspect of the old habits. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful.
Blessing.
You're entirely welcome and deserving. Thank you. And that brings us down to just about 4 minutes in our first hour. The second hour is coming up with Michael and Jeannie. I will ask if Jeannie is available to start a minute or two early and see if she responds. Are you there?
I am here.
Well, great. If you can take it a couple minutes early, that would be wonderful. And I will just remind everyone that we come from love. We're made of love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So while we're waiting on Michael to dial in, I will just say welcome to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is Monday, June the 13th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I'll just say that, you know, we've had an awesomely busy weekend. We had the Mind Shifters meeting Saturday morning, and we had a three-hour Why workshop Saturday afternoon. And both of those videos, I haven't had an opportunity yet to do editing and to get them on the website, but they will be available to watch on our website probably tomorrow. We have Aria today, and we're actually planning a trip this afternoon to go to the Dinosaur Museum. And so it'll probably be tonight or tomorrow before I finish the editing and everything and get it up on the website. But watch for that. It was a really great workshop. Michael said he hadn't done the Why workshop, it seemed like, in a long time, and he was all psyched up for that. So we'll have those videos on there for you shortly. So are you on? Okay, he's not quite on yet, but he'll be right with us. And making a few changes. I have not heard from either Google or Apple yet whether the app has been approved. I'll check on that after Michael takes over on the show. I'll do a quick check and see if those apps see if those apps have been updated. And we fixed a few glitches on it, and that should be good. Michael, we do already have a hand up.
Great. Let's go ahead. It was arguing with me getting into the control panel, so.
That technology, right?
Yep, okay. There you go.
This is area code 541, and I believe it's Miss Celinda. And Celinda, I think you were with us on Saturday, were you not?
Yes, I was. Thank you.
Well, we haven't heard your voice for a while. I was asking Jean, and she said you were there. And wondering, you know, we usually hear from you more often, so don't hear you. What's on your mind today?
Several things. One, I want to congratulate you. That Why workshop was amazing. I just was really impressed by it, and I already have in mind at least 10 people that I feel, including my family, that I feel might enjoy that workshop. So I'm going to share it with them now that it's going to be on the archives. Jeannie, can you direct me to just what section of the Why Again website it'll be on, because I get lost there all the time.
There's actually, I'll put it several places. One is that I've got a link under schedule where I had put the flyer and everything for the, you know, letting people know about it. And so I'm just going to kind of re-edit the way that's worded and put it out there. But then I'll also have it, probably the easiest place for you to find it, there's a section on the website that, let me click at the same time here so that, okay, it's up at the top and it says multimedia. And then when you go under that, it'll say watch and listen free. And I'll have it under that.
Perfect, because it's no statement about the quality of your website. It's just how my brain functions and what my values are, what my passions are, and what I would rather not spend my time much on, which is the computer, as you all well know. So anyway, one of the reasons you haven't heard from me is because I am in the garden many hours a day now. And so I don't have to do anything. I was just listening to Dr. Tim. I'm choosing to spend my time in the garden because I perceive it as being a survival tool for us in relation to the escalating prices that are going on. And also right. It's my temple. And also I perceive of it as a sharing garden. So for all of those reasons, I spend a lot of time in my 700-square-foot garden. And
sweet space for communion, isn't it?
Right, it is. And I think of you two all the time and little Aria Rain. I'm always cogitating in my brain cells on, okay, what's the next little sharing I can give to Aria that she would just delight in?
Sweet.
And so I hope that... I'm a long-distance abuelita for her, and that would be
cool.
Sweet. But anyway,
now tell me what that word means.
Oh, that's
I take it
Spanish.
That's a Spanish word. I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, abuela. It's a Spanish for grandma, and abuelita would
cool.
be precious little, you know, little grandma. Itas are always sweet diminutives for a word.
Nice.
Or a person, yeah. So
cool.
Anyway, kind of, I'm an adopt-a-granny, you know. I run
cool.
around thinking, does anybody need a granny? Does anybody need a granny? Yeah. But anyway, I just
well,
wanted
I'm going
to share
be...
with you that I saw the tightness of that workshop and how well it flowed. And it really, I was so glad. I almost didn't take part in it because I was tempted to go to the garden. But fortunately, the rain prevented me. And so they gave me the opportunity to open myself up and say, I'm going to go for this.
Perfect. Well, I will include you in the list. I'm actually putting together over the last 2 or 2.5 months. It's been kind of like a mini intensive for me. I've done a number of different podcasts, interviews with different people. There was a physician last week in Florida, and I've done the fellow who whose Facebook page we did this through as a marriage support group. I did an interview with him. The Avison people asked me to do a thing on the parasympathetic, sympathetic nervous system regarding the Avison. And it all just came together. Actually, my topic today, and depending whether we get how much conversation happens, as a result of all the things that my mini intents over the last couple of months have done. This morning I woke up with a new level of understanding, a new level of guidance on the Beatitudes and the word Tuvehun. So that's kind of where I'm planning on heading with the conversation, but I'm putting together a compendium of those things, including the Hear My Voice book club. You know, we did an awesome, we spent about 2.5 hours guiding a young lady through a worksheet. We did some Q&A on the worksheet. And so I'm putting together all of that in a text. And so I'll make sure you get a copy of it. And it'll have the link to the workshop once Jeannie gets posted too.
That's perfect. And I'm fascinated by the parasympathetic and the sympathetic and also the vagus nerve information and the pineal gland information. And I really appreciate all of the of sharings that you have for those things. I would also be interested in an article or an offering of how those things relate to each other. That's fascinating to me. And I want to tell you how appreciative I am for the free aspect of that workshop, because Larry and I, choosing to live very simple lives, have a very simple income. And we have watched just the food prices themselves escalate to taking a huge chunk out of our income. So I appreciate any freebies I can get within my time constraints and time constraints that I have chosen, because I value Larry, I value the garden, I value myself, I value your shows, and I just really appreciate everything that you've offered, and thank you so much.
Great. Had I sent you the sympathetic, parasympathetic dominance video that I did on the Avicen? Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll make sure that you get a copy of that, too. It's I did quite a bit of research.
Right. Now, you'd be sending that to my email, I hope, because I don't get on my... Yeah. And also, the Lord's Prayer in Aramaic, I have limited access with my gigabytes for streaming and things like that. So if you wouldn't mind resending that song, the Aramaic prayer song, where I can listen to it on the computer, that would be sweet.
Okay. Cool. We'll do it.
And we'll just
awesome.
Stay in touch. I know. It's,
all right,
it's
young
awesome.
Lady.
I have some more sharing, but I'll wait for another time.
Well, go for it.
Well,
We've got you.
Right. When we were doing that worksheet, it started to gel for me that I had to back in, like Jeannie offered, back in from the goal. And I
right.
realized that because I wasn't clear on the emotions, there were so many. And I realized that all of those emotions were tucked into one goal, which is I need something or someone to fix me because I'm damaged. Mm. Or I'm hopeless, or I'm helpless, or I'm incompetent, or any number of things for living in this physical world. And I'd rather play in the stars, of course. And then I realized that, oh, that's how I separated myself from Creator, because one of the things I'm aware of now is that emotional maturity is an interdependent state. Thich Nhat Hanh went into great length on this, and I really took the lesson to heart. David Riccio also did, who was a Catholic priest. But interdependence is, I understand in this moment of time, is how the Creator created us. They created us to be interdependent. Dependency and independency is enfolded within the third stage of maturity, which I'm sure is not the end stage of interdependence, and that I wasn't meant to be dependent all my life like a little tiny child, and I wasn't meant to be independent, which I didn't need anybody else or anything. I was created to be interdependent, and
yes.
That means that my little image within myself, my little metaphor for my body-mind is I am the captain of my vessel, my ship. And actually the Creator is the captain of my ship. I am the helmsperson and the Holy Spirit. I'm the driver, in effect, and the Holy Spirit is... Ruha is my navigator, my compass.
GPS.
And, pardon?
GPS.
Yeah, so I can relate to a compass on a sailboat, but I don't relate to GPS because I never use it. the compass pointing towards the North Star, you know, pointing towards home. And maybe the captain of my ship might be Creator being home. I'm just making images, metaphors now. And the Christ mind is the captain of the ship. And I'm the helmsperson, and the Ruha is my compass. And the North Star is the Creator. It's home. And I just love that image because a ship plies the oceans. And oceans, for me, are a symbol of emotions. Oceans of emotions. And I don't do so well with emotions sometimes. So it's all an exciting voyage. Now, that's it.
Cool.
Whatever that means. I'm very definitely a tierra firma person. Tierra firma person. I like solid ground, so that's the real a real metaphor for me. But that's it.
Sweet.
There you go.
Awesome.
All right.
Well, there's a woman who was formerly the head of Brain Bioresearch, National Mental Institute of Health, Candace Pert, and in one of her lectures, you know, and this woman's like a pure scientist. She's the one who discovered opiate receptors in the brain. That's how much of a scientist she is. But in one of her lectures, she talks about the smallest number of people that can gain entryway to heaven, and not meaning heaven in a, you know, churchy-andy way, but just to gain that state, that higher state. The smallest number of people that can enter there is two. That's our interdependence.
Yeah.
I thought that was a powerful way of saying it, that that we're designed to be in that type of connected, committed, deep, intense relationship and interdependent with each other.
Yes, and within that interdependence, what I'm finding with my relationship with Larry is that we depend on each other. And we also are independent of each other, and we come together as a unit in interdependency. So sometimes I depend on his independence and his cooperation, and other times he does the same for me, but it's all within the flow of an equality sort of relationship. That's how I see
yes.
it, and that's how I feel.
For sure.
Sounds wonderful.
I'm with you on that.
Thank you so much. And yes, Candace Pert is a favorite of mine. So thank you for refreshing my memory.
All right, young lady.
Right.
Well, thank you for
I
joining
am complete.
Us.
All right.
Have a blessed one. All righty.
You also. Bye-bye.
So, Miss Janie, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's all quiet, so go for it.
Okay. Well, I want to just share a little bit more from the first century Aramaic Beatitudes. And as I said, the kind of mini intensive that I've been doing, it really kind of started on a new level, the energy flow with the thing I did for Avison, and then I've done several different interviews and presentations on top of what we normally do, and it's all just kind of come together for me this morning on a new level of insight in the Beatitudes. And so I want to talk a little bit about more about those in terms of application. And, you know, the world tends to teach us that the Beatitudes are some kind of a nice philosophy, but actually very just exactly like what they call the Lord's Prayer, it's not a prayer. The Beatitudes are not a nice philosophy. They're a set of instructions. They're a way to achieve a space that's different than what the culture has taught us. And so when we take the first word in each of the Beatitudes, the Greeks translate it as blessed are they. So we hear this, we read this, blessed are they, blessed are they, blessed are they, blessed are they, blessed are they. But in Aramaic, there's nothing that even resembles that. What it speaks of is that there is an internal guidance system. Literally, in Aramaic, the first part of that word, tuvehun, it's a three-part word. The first part is the word tuv, which means attitude of mind. And what he speaks is that there's this attitude of mind that part of our internal, eternal design. And that part is meant to be active, kind of like a GPS guiding us all the time, and literally being at the root of the output of the perceptual mind. If someone lives in a state of hostility, then the root of the output of their minds perceptually, everything they look at is going to be threatening. If they're in a state of, or pardon me, if they're in a state of fear, everything they look at, because of that neural structure that underlies perception at that moment, everything they look at in fear is going to be threatening. When hostility is active, everything they look at is going to be irritating. And what Yeshua was conveying 2,000 years ago, and you know, there's no in between understanding of this. You can't go to the Greek translations. You can't go to the Latin translations and find this, because the comprehension, the language, the verbiage, the very brain cells for that level of understanding just don't exist. There are no words in the English language. So you know, to describe this one word, tuvehun, takes a paragraph. So if we were to open up this idea, and I looked up after this, you know, this morning, my guidance in waking up was to go to a new level. You know, you've heard me many times say, cultivate your relationship with love, cultivate your relationship with love. But hand in hand with that, what I got this morning as guidance was that you want to spend time each morning cultivating your relationship with this tuv that aligns with love, that was put in us by the Creator. And because of our hostile, fearful, busy, you know, traumatized world, we tend to put that aside. And that makes it more difficult for the mind to construct perceptions that bring us closer to our true state of origin and our true state of being. So, you know, a simple long form of this idea of tuvehun, it's a three-part word, but each beatitude would have this introduction, this word before it that says, a latent neural structure implanted by God to guide you to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession, you who, and then each of the beatitudes is a set of instructions. And so I've looked to several different translations and thought it would be appropriate to share. And Dale Allen Hoffman, working with the Aramaic, takes that word tuvihun, and the way he presents it is that divinely attuned and consciously ripe in this present moment. So being in alignment with love, divinely attuned. And then remember that word sin in Aramaic, we've said, means unripened. And that it's got nothing to do with the whole Greek idea of sin, but just that when there are two different aspects to it. One is it's an archery term that means off the mark, and the other one means ripe or in alignment, or the sin aspect being out of alignment. And so Dale is taking this word tuvihun and tying it into that, and so divinely attuned and consciously ripe in this present moment is what comes forward from Dale Allen Hoffman on that word tuvehun. And so I just want to kind of briefly go through. We did a whole week on the Beatitudes not too long ago. But for me, it's kind of just coming to a new tweak, a new perspective on this. So the first Beatitude, first instruction, when you listen to the Greek, it makes no sense whatsoever. What it says is, blessed are the poor, the traditional translation, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. It's like, in what universe does that make sense? You know, here comes this man, Yeshua, who says, I come to connect you to the spirit of truth. And now somebody says you're supposed to be poor in spirit to get there. It just makes, it doesn't make any sense. And the reason for that is because in the Aramaic language, there are, you'll remember they've said that, nobody would change one jot or tittle. They're the smallest characters in the Aramaic alphabet. And one of those characters would look like a fly speck on a piece of paper. And in the Aramaic, the word that's been translated by the Greeks as poor is actually home. This is one of the ways we know the Aramaic came first, because there's the accurate translation. It's your home in the eternal forces from God. Rather than being poor, the fly speck on the piece of paper changes the word home to poor. So we want to have our home in the eternal forces for God, and then that shakes out as the result of that is that you'll live in a heavenly estate. And remember that word heaven isn't about someplace off in space somewhere. In Aramaic, it would translate as the community of love. For yours is, you're going to be living in this community of love. And then Yayam, another translator of the Aramaic, his translation for that is, now is the right time to make your home in the breathing unity. The fertile soil of the queendom will birth your clear guidance. So you can hear how Yehem shifts that just a little bit. He's tying into the breath, which of course also goes back to this elemental force within us, Ruka Dekudcha, she who undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. And if that condition is met, then we're going to have a clear guidance system. And everything is going to tend to fall into place. Starting out with this neural structure active. How do you do it? You breathe. You have to get this guidance system into activity. Dale Allen Hoffman translates that one as, attuned and consciously ripe in this present moment are those who have their true home in the emptiness of breath, spirit, and eternal forces from Alaha, for they shall realize the blissfully empowering presence of life itself. So that's Dale Allen Hoffman's translation for that first beatitude. And once again, from the perspective of the Kabor's manuscript, it comes out as, you who have a home in the eternal or active forces from the Creator, yours is a heavenly estate. And so that's the first result that's going to come, or that's the first set of instructions. Make sure that rather than being in your perception, being in your mind, remember we've said 1,000 times, in order to heal, you've got to be out of your mind. How do you get out of your mind? Forgiveness is how you collapse the perceptual constructs of the mind. And then you are living in, you are guided by, you hear, you feel the impact of these eternal forces that move through you. The next beatitude, according to the Greeks, is, blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Now, Yehem translates that a little differently from the Aramaic. He says, restored are they who allow their inner pain to surface. They shall touch the place where love carries them to greater wholeness. So am I willing to look inside of me? Yehim saying here, I need to look inside of me. I need to be able to, you know, let go of the drug of busyness, to stop running around all the time, doing, and allow myself to look and allow this internal dynamic, this internal energy that needs to surface. And as I'm willing to do that, that's going to carry me to greater wholeness. That particular beatitude, Dale Allen Hoffman describes as divinely attuned and consciously ripe in this present moment, are those with absolute willingness to experience and process through their intense emotional turmoil, confusion, and suffering. They shall be freed from suffering as the root causes of their inner divisions return to wholeness. So, you know, we've talked over and over again about the fact that the Aramaic forgiveness process creates a pathway into the unconscious part of the mind. And when you realize that the reason we have an unconscious mind is because there's something in there that we don't want to look at, that we don't want to feel, that we don't want to deal with. And so part of making this underlying neural structure that the Creator planted us from the beginning active, having it just below the surface of the mind all the time, is to move the garbage out of the way that generations and generations have refused to deal with, have refused to look at. And so if you look at the Kabbalist translation of those from our Beatitudes poster, Tuvehun, a latent neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being, becomes your conscious possession. You who honor truth and profess your errors and the errors of your society. Now, most people have no care whatsoever for truth. If they're in rage and their mind's projecting and they're going to puke on somebody else, you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me free. No interest whatsoever in honoring truth, willing to do the greatest puke possible and make it everybody else's fault. Even when they realize they've been through it, they've been doing it for decades and decades and decades, and they're still blaming somebody else for it. So this particular beatitude requires, if you want to activate this precious neural structure that was put inside of you to guide you to happiness and well-being, you not only have to profess your own errors, but the errors of your society. And what it says is, in Aramaic, if you do that, you'll be freed of mental stress. And when you're freed of mental stress, it's like you've cleared this layer of gunk out of the unconscious that keeps this original neural structure hidden from you, keeps it covered up. Remember, on a conscious level, there's only room for 9 bits of data. You remember that Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, the max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits. And if we refuse to own, you know, go back to earliest relationships, early childhood, and look at the dramas and traumas, and people who are unwilling to open those spaces in themselves, unwilling to honor truth and be responsible for them, are always puking on everybody else and telling everybody else how it's their fault for how they're feeling, and never once stop and go, I've been through this feeling 87 different times with 42 different people, and I'm still blaming and raging at everybody else. You've got to stand in willingness to tell the truth to yourself if you're ever going to change the game. So again, your jam, restored are they who allow their inner pain to surface, they shall touch the place carries them to greater wholeness. Dale speaks of those whose absolute willingness to experience and process through intense emotional turmoil, confusion, and suffering, they shall be freed from suffering as the root causes of their inner divisions, return to wholeness. And am I willing to honor truth, profess my errors, the errors of my society? Am I willing to be freed of mental stress, to let loose of that one? The next beatitude, the next instruction set for how do I get this neural structure that was put in me right from the beginning to guide me to happiness and well-being. Historically, the Greeks translate the next one as, blessed are they mourning their wrongs, for they will be comforted. You know, it's not about sitting around mourning your wrongs. That's the historical interpretation of this one that's about honoring truth. It's not mourning your wrongs, it's honoring the truth. Yes, there are errors to be owned, but it's not about sitting around crying over spilt milk and look at your errors, but rather honoring truth and being able to look at those places that have been hidden. And then it's not just that there'll be comfort, but literally there'll be the release of the energy of mental stress. It's phenomenal. The next one, classically, according to the King James, is, and again, remember, each of these is an instruction for how to activate this tuv in Aramaic that the Creator put into us to guide us, literally, to carry us to happiness and well-being. So, again, the Greek misinterpretation, blessed are they. Again, there's no such idea as blessed in there. It's tuvehun, a latent neural structure. Latent meaning it's hiding under the surface. It's out of view. Becomes your conscious possession, you-hoo. And it's not about being meek. It's not about inheriting the earth in the sense of possession of something. So Yehem translates that from the Aramaic as having made soft what was rigid within, a new ripeness shall bring a renewed inspiration, and confident strength will flow through them. That's how Yehem renders that particular beatitude, that particular instruction set for activating this neural structure that we're designed to have active and guiding our lives. Dale L. Hoffman translates that one as, divinely attuned and consciously ripe in this present moment are those who allow their inner structures of comfort in relation to others and self to melt back into the empty potential of the nothingness. For they shall realize their oneness within this infinite diversity of creation. So kind of looking at the release of ideas of separateness here and coming back to the truth of who one is. From the Kabor's manuscript and my translation or my rendition of it, a latent neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession, you who have humility. The Greeks have taught us that humility is about groveling in the earth like a worm. And that's not what it is. Humility in Aramaic is a mental quality, and it's the quality of being able to perceive and cooperate with the good desires of others. You know, am I able to see beyond my own projections and recognize that everyone has good desires, and that when I do that, because of the fact that we live in a world that is based in cooperation of the most cooperative. You know, it's interesting if you go back and read what's his name, the whole evolutionary game, and he talks about survival of the fittest, and yet he talks about love over and over and over again, and that's hardly ever mentioned. It's all about fight and strife and fitness, the fittest. But really, that's not the truth. It's the most cooperative. And so when we have this ability to look for the highest and best in others, the mental quality of perceiving and cooperating with those good desires, then because we are unified in our search for well-being, for wellness, for wholeness, for wealth even, cooperation is going to bring that. And so the Greeks, again, you know, translate that generally speaking as blessed are the meek, you know, like if you lay around and you just put your head down, let everybody walk on you, then everything will be cool. And it's not even close, but it's certainly something that a lot of people who want to control others would invite others to do. The next, according to the King James, is translated, is blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Excuse me for just 1 minute, I'm making a note. So blessed are the Greeks, again, it's blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. And they almost make it like, you know, this idea of righteous, they've attached it to words like indignation and anger. And it is not a state of the activity of some sort of anything that would resemble righteousness and winning, you know, for they shall be filled. Yehem, as opposed to that kind of, you know, what generally from the Greek would seem to be action, you know, you're hungering and thirsting for this, his translation offers that it's resting in a deeper longing. And when we rest in this deep longing, this space where we're willing to have this connectedness happen, then the power of Ruka Dukkha will move them in the direction of true fulfillment. In other words, you're going to have a guidance system, and the guidance system is going to inform you as exactly where to go to bring about fulfillment of those deeper longings, not about, you know, hungering and thirsting after being right, being on top of others, you know, that whole sort of righteous game, but longing for the truth of our being to be experienced. And when we rest in that, when we breathe and rest in that, when we let go of stress, when we get out of sympathetic dominance, get out of the fear, fright, flight, freeze mode, then there's an underlying power in you that is going to carry you in the direction of fulfillment. Dale Allen Hoffman translates that one as divinely attuned and consciously ripe in this present moment. And for me, that would translate, you know, divinely attuned, that we're in alignment with our spirit nature, with the true nature of love in us, and consciously ripe, that we're in a receptive space in this present moment. And his translation of the hunger and thirst is to selflessly regard and act on behalf of all concerned equally, fairly, and as one unified life. So it's not, as the Greek translation would imply, that it's about winning, again, being in that righteous space, but that the truth is, you know, energetically, when we realize that everything is energy, that we're unified, that there's one life, and that we work for the good of that one life, no matter what individual fulfillment would look like. So it's fulfilling this state of, according to Dale, of this oneness that flows to us, being attuned to that and being able to listen to it. And from the Kaboris, according to the poster we publish, there's still a different take here, and that is that you who hunger, and we leave the word, the Aramaic word kinuta there, and what one wants to have is the mind structure that underlies the judgment and behavior, the attitude that's described as just and fair behavior between people to be active. So it has to do with just and fair behavior in the context of this oneness rather than righteousness, oneness. And recognizing that in order for the mind to construct a perception, remembering that the whole world you see, when you look through your, you think you're looking through your eyes, you're not looking through your eyes, you're looking through your brain. Your eye brings information in, you don't see outside with your eye, your brain structures the world that you see. And so what this beatitude is actually saying is that there's a mind structure that when it's active will bring forward behaviors, attitudes, judgments, all aspects of it will be what's just and fair between people. And what it says is, you know, if you do that, if you have that active, then you're going to receive it. As you give it, you're going to receive it. You know, there's a story about the guru who's in the middle of the river, and a chela, a student, comes out and says, I teach me how to want God. Teach me, teach me. And the master grabs him by the head of the hair and stuffs him under the water and holds him there. And this guy's struggling and kicking and trying to get up. And he holds him until the guy's almost drowned. And he finally pulls himself up. And the student's like, why did you do that to me? He said, you wanted to know how deeply you were going to have to want it to have it. There it is. So that kind of fits here, that rather than self-interest, to really, truly have this neural structure active, that from every aspect is going to bring us into what is just and fair between people. And what Yeshua says is, you're going to attain it. You're going to receive it. Now, again, the Greeks translated that one as, blessed are they, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Just doesn't cut it. And then the next beatitude, according to the King James, speaks of, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Yehem, from the Aramaic, says, stored in union with radiant love, it shall begin to extend from their own heart center. So this beatitude is, according to Yehem, is about reconnecting to active present love as your truth and coming from the very deepest parts. Allow it to extend from there to your own heart center. And, you know, to me that would also include the linking up. You know, there's a recognition, you know, that the brain is where the mind operates, but they've also recognized that there's a mind in operation within our hearts. And when we link those two up, and a simple act of placing your hand on your heart and imagining that the intelligence, the wisdom, the compassion, the genius through the brain in your heart is linked to the one that operates in your head. The one in your head has computer genius. But if we don't have the two operating, and this is where that union has to be restored, if we don't have the two operating, if we're just working with the brain and the head, oh, it is a monumental cipher device. It decodes, it's genius. But if it doesn't have the wisdom behind it, then it only has intelligence. And, you know, if you hand to someone intelligence that says, how do we win this war with their intelligence, they'll make the weapons of mass destruction. If you handed that same question to someone with the heart brain operating and linked, they'd look at why and how there is war and why and how we're going to bring about healing. So Yeham really clicks this one right on the head. With restored in union with radiant love, it shall begin to express or extend from your own heart centers. And by so doing, blessing everything in the creation, blessing everyone within the creation. Dale Allen Hoffman, his translation of the word Tuvehun, divinely attuned and consciously ripe in this present moment, are those who birth their love for others. Now, I'm a little in disagreement here with this love for others, because remembering that, you know, love is a state of being, it's not a state of doing, it's not something we can do. But, you know, for me, it would be more the birthing of the truth of who we are as love, of self and life from the inside. He speaks here from the spiritual womb, which would tie back in, I think, with the AM's idea of bringing the brain of the heart into activity. For they shall have all-embracing love, which flows from the center point of true being. So each of these, I would offer, is necessary for experiencing the activation of something that is so far beyond comprehension in our intellectually oriented world, in our Greek, our being steeped in Greek philosophy, Greek mythology, the seduction of sophistry. So this particular beatitude from the Kabouris and from the poster we published with my interpretation, Tuvehun, once again, a latent neural structure. And this is the whole reason for going through each of these. Each of these is an instruction for how to activate this underlying neural structure within us so that it's at the root of our perception, our decisions, and behaviors. So this one would be that you who have Rachma, and, you know, we've talked a lot about Rachma over the years, and that is this filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that brings human life, pure being, pure love into our human forms, and that presence of love, that state of being, is so powerfully embodied that it covers everything, encompasses all judgment and behavior. And that when that is active in us, then by offering it, that's how we're going to receive it. So again, it's not the Greek translation of blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy, but really, truly discovering, realizing, experiencing yourself as love, and that love encompasses judgment and behavior. So it covers everything, and that when that happens, energetically you're going to set that up and receive the same. And then the next beatitude, according to the Greeks, speaks about being pure of heart, for they shall see God. Yehem translates that from the Aramaic as, wise are they who are consistently restored in this way. Like flashes of lightning, the Creator will increasingly reveal itself in the depths of their soul. So there are going to be insights, there are going to be connection points that will not be rational, that will not be intellectual, and that's how I would interpret or understand him speaking of the flashes of lightning, that there are going to be insights that come. There are going to be moments of enlightenment that will open, and there will be deeper and deeper relationship with and comprehension of the Creator. And that will be experienced in the very depths of their own beingness. Dale Allen Hoffman, he interprets, Tuvehun, divinely attuned and consciously ripe in this present moment, are those who embody absolute clarity and purified perception to recognize the single nature of life, for they realize their oneness within. And we've talked about this idea of purified perception. You know, we, as long as we hold hostility or fear, our perceptual constructs are going to be colored by that hostility or fear. We're going to be, as Paul spoke about, we'll see as though through a glass darkly. As you begin to clean that up, then the only data that is in your perceptual system is accurate data. And so when your mind constructs a perception about something, even though it's not the thing itself, you know, it's not the actuality of the thing that we're experiencing when we're experiencing it through perception. It's not the direct experience. It's an indirect experience, but at least with corrected perception, everything is in alignment with the truth. You still can't get the actuality through that perception, but at least there's no error in it. You're a whole lot closer to the truth of it. And what he translates, what Dale translates that as, resulting in, is that they'll realize their own oneness within the Creator, the absolute and only being, according to Dale. And in Aramaic, the word is Alaha. That's the word that Yeshua used for the Creator. So once we clean this mind up, this perceptual mind. Now, there's another level than just corrected perception. And we've talked about this a little bit before, and that when we're willing to simply collapse what carbon-based memory has to say out of its structure about the actuality in the moment, when we're freed of that, then enlightened perception means that the actuality, the truth, what is, writes its meanings in us. And that's when we come into real union and connectedness with the Creator. So once again, this beatitude from the poster that we publish on the Beatitudes, Tuvehun, a latent neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being, will be your conscious possession, you who have a completely purified mind. In other words, you've cleaned up all the hostility or fear. Hostility or fear couldn't come up in you because it's not in you anymore. And most of the world, of course, remember, talks about how their hostility or fear is caused by Bill or Harry or Mary or Hortense. They made me angry. They made me sad. They made me afraid. When you really step in and do your work, then you've got a purified mind, and it is free of error. being free of error, it no longer distorts your experience of life or of the Creator. And so once one has this purified mind, then according to the interpretation that I've done, is it's that you will comprehend the Creator. You'll comprehend this invisible source of creation. And we are designed to have that comprehension, I would offer. So the historical Greek interpretation, blessed are they, tuvehun, who are pure in heart, when you realize that that word heart means the unconscious, when you cleaned up your unconscious and you removed what doesn't belong, then a whole other level of experience happens, and your mind is able to support, the mind, because it no longer has error in it, supports you in your direct experience of the actuality, which includes the direct experience of the Creator. Then the last beatitude we're going to talk about, the seventh, in the King James, it's translated as, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Yehem from the Aramaic interprets that as ripening in new wholeness. They shall become as channels for a new creation. So when we step into this state, when we're willing to be a channel for something that's never been, when we're willing to be receptive, we're not stuck in the perceptual constructs in the mind of the past, but we're open. You know, there's an interesting story about he's got an estate still down in Florida in Fort Myers. I was talking to someone about him this morning. Edison is said to get his ideas. He explained to people where he got his inventions, where he got his new ideas. And if you go down and see his laboratory, which is still there down near Fort Myers, along with the Edison and the Ford estate are now linked. They're actually one. When I first started going there, they were two separate. But there's actually still a cot in the laboratory where Edison said when he ran out of ideas and he's working on invention, he'd go lay down, he'd breathe, he'd hold an iron ball in his hand, and he'd allow himself to go to sleep. And when he got to the relaxed state that his arm wilted and the iron ball fell on the floor, bingo, he was at that level of mind. He developed that as a way to bring in new inventions, to bring something new in. And so that's exactly what he was doing. And as Yehem presents this one, shall be channels for new creations, serving the same as for the restoration in others. So when one steps into that space, something that's never been seen before shows up, and we're down to the last minute or so. So I'm going to quickly move through what Dale says, and he says that this one translates as, those who birth peace from the center point of their true being, they shall become conscious, creative vessels of the Creator, the absolute and only being. And in the Aramaic, there's an element in my understanding of this, the words here. The word is abdeh, you, the abdeh is you who through service work effectively to produce the peace and understanding under and in accord with the Creator's will. When you do that, you will activate this neural structure. It will be yours, and it will be yours for eternity. And when you do that, you'll be called the offspring or the children of the Creator. And that's what we're designed for. And when we step into that role, the underlying guidance system that was put into us becomes ours for the whole of our eternal lives. And that's what we're designed for. Thank you for sharing with me. Blessings. Thank you, Aria.